You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Royal J. Swenson, born in Pocatello, Idaho, July the 9th, 1933.
Royal J. Swenson is a hardworking, thoughtful, and deeply spiritual man whose life has been shaped by service and love for his family. He was born on July 9th, 1933 in Pocatello, and grew up on a small dry farm in eastern Idaho. There, he learned the value of hard work and responsibility at a young age. Jay developed a lifelong passion for agriculture, which led him to attend Brigham Young University and later Utah State. He met his wife, Anne, at BYU, and the two were married in 1953. Shortly after, Jay was drafted into the Korean War and was deployed to Germany for 18 months. The Swensons raised seven amazing children: Linda, Jackie, David, Michael, Sally, Cece, and Jennifer. Together, they navigated military service, frequent moves, and many of the various challenges of life. Throughout his career in agriculture and soil science, Jay was often at the forefront of new ideas and programs, while also serving diligently in the church wherever his family lived. Jay is a faithful follower of Christ, and that belief has shaped his entire life. His story begins with his parents.
Tressa Bailey Swenson and her father also was a farmer. Both had big families. My dad is Royal Oscar Swenson, and he's a farmer. A small dry farm in eastern Idaho. And then later he was a policeman for probably, and a farmer for about 20 years or so. For his free time, he umpired the high school baseball games and judged the boxing, the high school boxing, and was referee for the football. Well, I mean, he stayed active in sports.
Jay was raised in Malad, Idaho, as the fourth of five children.
I weighed 6.5 pounds. My hair was white, and I was a copper color. I've got two brothers and two sisters, and I was the only one that was born in a hospital. The others were all born at home. The oldest one is Robert Dean, and Helen Janiel, Edna Toyla, me, and Doyle LeGrand. You know, we just had good friends that, you know, lived on the same block as I did, and we just played every day. With the war on, that was the main basic thing. We played everywhere as some kind of a war game.
Many of Jay's early memories are of working on the dry farm, especially when his dad was unable to do so.
Dry farm, small dry farm, grew mostly just wheat. A few other crops once in a while, but mostly wheat. We hauled rocks off of that farm forever. And all we accomplished was we lowered the elevation of the farm. The rocks were still there. At one time, my dad couldn't even drive the truck. We had multiple hernias and just couldn't drive that tractor. So I did all of it for a couple of years. My older brother, now he was already gone with the north wind. How many times I would tell my brother, keep your mouth shut, don't say anything. And then he'd say something, and the argument was on. And my younger brother was pretty delicate. I mean, his heart was always giving him problems. And so he didn't help much.
Jay loved his high school years, spending time with good friends and staying busy with sports. He graduated in 1951 and has made an effort ever since to keep track of his graduating class.
I've always been interested in people. I always want to know. Now, this is my high school graduating class. Just went to all the football games, the basketball games, and I always said I need to keep a C average so I can play sports. I played football and was on the boxing team in high school. I thought I was a great track star too, but it didn't pan out that well. I like the class in agriculture and the FFA. Even then, I knew I wanted to do my life work with agriculture.
After high school, Jay moved to Provo to attend Brigham Young University, where he met the love of his life, Anne.
At that time, I had probably never really been away from home. I was never been out of Idaho and Utah. And I went to BYU, and my counselor said, "What do you want to do for your life?" I said, I want to work in agriculture. And she says, "Oh, agronomy?" And I said, "No, agriculture." I never heard the word agronomy before. So that's what I did. The first day of my sophomore year, I met her wearing my cowboy boots, clomping around in the room next to where I was. And I said to myself, "Somebody's going to die over this." And I opened the door and there she was in my cowboy boots, and I couldn't say a word. And then we went to a football game that afternoon. She didn't know much about football, and I testified to that. She asked, I can't remember who we were playing or who won. She asked a question every minute. Why are they doing that? Why did he knock that ball down? I mean, it's endless questions. Then after the football game, I was enjoying her. I mean, I really liked her. After the football game was over, I was invited to join three or four of these service clubs. And they had open houses, so we went to the open houses, and then it was time for the dance to start. So we went to the dance, and our first date was probably 12 hours long. And the Wisdom's house was up on this little hill, and the house that she was running with these other girls was right here, just a circular driveway between the two. So I guess that's why I liked her. She was close. That first night, that long 12-hour date, when I took her to her house, and I was walking around, I said, "Man, that was a nice day. I really enjoyed it." I mean, she could talk about almost any subject except football. I said, "Damn, I'm going to go out with her again." And so we did, and we went to almost all of the things that were put on by the college. And then we went to Rolly's, a little place where you can get drinks and stuff, and see if we get enough money to get one milkshake, and then we'd both drink out of it. it seemed to have a really good time. And then I think it was at Christmas time at BYU, they have what they call pinning. If you don't have enough money to buy an engagement ring, so we used my 4-year the seminary graduation pin, and things just happened after that.
Jay and Ann were married on July 3rd, 1953 in the Logan, Utah temple. They have now been married for over 70 years.
Oh, the longest day in my life. We lived in Moab, 50 miles away from the Logan temple, and he had to do everything. We stayed up till probably 2 o'clock in the morning talking to my sisters. I had to get up at 4:30 to get to the temple by the time. And we did all had lunch too at Logan. And then we got home just probably about 3 o'clock. And we thought, oh, we're going to have a nap. And just as we laid down, all my friends come up there with a big truck with a toilet sitting on the back of the truck. And we had to get up on the back of the truck. I had to sit on that toilet and hold her while they drove all over town, honking their horn. And then my younger brother was driving my dad's police car with a sign on. So they drive right over in front of my old girlfriend's house with the siren on, and they just stopped there. Embarrassing to me, I don't know.
The newlyweds were excited to start their life together, but everything took an unexpected turn when Anne had to return to Canada due to immigration issues. They were then apart from December until the following August. Linda, their first daughter, was born during this time.
On Christmas night, I put her on a bus in Idaho Falls, headed for Cardston, because she got a letter that says she couldn't stay here any longer. And so we lived in my grandma's little old house, and it had no running water and an outside toilet.
Jay, Ann, and Linda were finally reunited, but it was short-lived because in November, Jay was drafted into the Army during the Korean War. Because of that, he ended up in Germany for a year and a half, and during this time, their second daughter, Jackie, was born.
I got a job building a freeway at Moab. I was home. I made good money and so forth. And that lasted until November 4th when I got drafted. I could have got out of it because we already had Linda and she was pregnant with Jackie. But I felt I had to go be a hero. Fort Ord, California. Then we went to Fort Smith, Arkansas for cannoneer training. Learned how to be a computer for a 18-gun brigade. And they fired these 8-inch guns. And I was scheduled to go to Korea, but just as I was ready to graduate, they called the whole thing off. So I went to Germany instead. Swedish Command at first, and then I was transferred later to New Orleans. I tried to get a compassionate transfer back to Camp Carson, Colorado, the chaplain. I went and talked to him, and he wouldn't fill out the paperwork because he didn't think I was, I was eligible. And I said, well, that's not your job. Your job is to fill out those papers. And, the Army will make the decision. So I wrote a letter to my commanding chief, General Eisenhower, and told him he wouldn't fill this out. And then 2 weeks later, I got the commander of the 34th Field Marshal. He called me in. Here's this, my letter. Sitting on his desk, he said, did this really happen like you said in this letter? I said, yeah, as close as I could tell, that's exactly what happened. So he dismissed the chaplain and filled me out some papers to go to New Orleans to the 84th field artillery from Germany back to Camp Carson, Colorado. And I never did go there. They let me loose at Fort Sheridan, Illinois.
Jay remembers coming home to his two little girls who had not yet known him as part of their lives.
Well, they were both scared to death of me, especially the youngest one, Jackie. Every time I looked at her, she'd grab her mother by the neck. She was really, and her dad had done so much with those two girls that they'd rather have him than me.
Finally, Jay was ready to go back to school. Housing at BYU did not work out, and so the family moved up to Logan, Utah, so Jay could continue to pursue his education in agronomy. In Logan, they welcomed two sons, David and Michael.
Well, I put my name on the list. I had been gone for 4 years, and I come back, and I was still four pages behind, and I was going to quit and go to, you know, get a job and go back to BYU the next year. My dad said, if you stop going to school right now, you'll never go back. Because you'll buy a car, you'll buy a house, you'll buy furniture. You'll never go back to. So we went to Utah State. It was a really good move. I mean, I really enjoyed both places, but it was, you know, completely different circumstances. I got my degree in general soils. My master's degree was in soil chemistry. Thesis was actually a plant breeding program rather than a soils program. Mike was just born, so we had four when I finished my master's degree.
As a baby, David was very sick. It was a scary time for the Swensons, as they weren't sure if he would make it.
Well, he'd get these spells, and he just couldn't breathe. They wouldn't take care of him in my lab. And I drove all the way back to Logan with him. I just parked the car right in Main Street, and Logan grabbed him and ran up to the doctor's office. Anyway, in just a few minutes, he was better, and I was so happy. I grabbed him like that, and about that time, all that goop in his lungs come out all over me from head to foot, and I didn't even care.
After graduating with his master's degree, Jay's first job took the family to Blackfoot, Idaho.
With the Bureau of Indian Affairs at Fort Hall, Idaho, I was there to map the whole 500,000 acres of Fort Hall. Then she went to work as a waitress in Blackfoot. And so I would get home from work just in time for her to take the car to work. And then I had to, a lot of times she'd already have dinner for them, but a lot of times I had to make their dinner and so forth. And Mike was just a baby. And I finally got me one of those things that go over your shoulder and put him in here. He wouldn't stop crying.
The Swensons moved to Cooley Dam, Washington next and had two more daughters, Sally and Cece.
I had a job up in Cooley Dam, Washington. As a brand new government program. So I took the job, and what I would do, the tribal council would give me a name of an Indian on some land or some equipment, but he couldn't make a living at farming. And so then I'd make him a farm plan. He needs this much equipment. He needs this many more cattle. He needs an irrigation system. Then me and the farmer would go back to the tribal council and explain everything we'd done. And the very first plan I made, Filio Nash, the Indian Commissioner in Washington, D.C., accepted that first plan I made as a guide for all the rest of the Indian reservation. In fact, this guy, the first full year just on the farm, he paid more taxes than he made in salary before he went on this program.
The next stop for the Swenson family was Auburn, New York. Along with Jay's busy work schedule, he was also the branch president there.
Then we went to New York with Pepsi-Cola. I left the government. We had this big deal with Cuba when they cut off our sugar supply. And so New York and Maine each got a 33,000-acre sugar beet allotment. They didn't know what a sugar beet was. I went back there to train these eight field men. They had never seen a sugar beet before. The guy went back there. He was head of the whole ag, part of it. This Mark Barrett, man, probably some of the best friends we ever had in our lives. He had the same amount of kids we did, but they were just a few years older. In Auburn, New York, I was the branch president, and we met in the YMCA, did our baptisms in the deep end of the pool because they always had a class in the shallow end. And the young women, especially east of where we lived, were so interested in our view on the family and children who died before they were 18. They really wanted to be baptized. We had four missionaries assigned just to that branch. Now, there's five stakes in the same area. There used to be one. And Auburn is a ward, not a branch. They have their own chapel and a big crowd and, doing well. I don't want to take all the credit, but I hope I get just a little bit of credit for this thing happening.
Garden City, Kansas is where the Swensons move next. And once again, Jay was kept busy with work and serving in their congregation.
As the first counselor in Garden City, we met in the Methodist Church. So we called it the M&M. And the Methodist made sure they had first choice on everything. So anyway, we had these people come down. We had this big program at the community center. And we had it three nights. We completely sold out all three nights. And so we made enough money to buy a property for a building.
The next move took Jay, Ann, and their six kids to Plano, Texas. Their baby Jennifer was born there, rounding their family out at seven kids total. Jay was busy being dad, working, and of course, serving in the church.
We lived in Plano, and I really wasn't a very good dad because I was gone almost every other week for the whole week. And when I'd come home, instead of giving the kids love, going outside and wrestling with them on the grass or whatever, I'd assign each one to a room and just got to be cleaned up in 15 minutes. When I'd come in the house, every room was messy. And so I'd just assign somebody to each room and then they all hated me. They didn't want to go out and play on the grass. But now in McKinney, parts of two stakes, 12 wards, and I was the first one to be a branch president there. And we met in a members burned out hotel. It was only the bottom floor and the next floor that was still there. And these people were mostly come from Catholic background. The kids used to run across the freeway, right through McKinney. And they'd run across it, And then this little 8-year-old boy decided he'd try it, but he didn't make it. this car hit him and he got killed. And so they had a wake. I never in my life felt so far away from my Heavenly Father than at that wake. I mean, he just moaned and groaned. I mean, so anyway, the mission president out of Dallas was Carlos Acey. So we had him talk at this little boy's funeral. Well, when these people arrived, and they were, most of them were still in their wake. I mean, they were still crying and moaning and so forth. He got up to speak. I couldn't understand his Spanish, but I knew just enough of it that I could tell about where he was at in his speech. And pretty quick, they were sitting straight up in their seat, and they were listening, and then pretty quick, they dried their eyes. By the end of his talk, man, they were smiling and happy as could be. What a difference between a wake and a gospel talk of where this little boy was going, and, never forget that. Ann and I have coined our own thing that we are pioneer Mormons. When I was mission, or French friend, there was always three things that you still had to do. You get back in here, there never anything to do. But you enjoy the thing, and you don't mind not being able to go to bed at your regular bedtime or have to get up earlier in the morning to go see somebody. It was just good.
The family then moved to Bountiful, Utah, and on to Kennewick, Washington. They finally landed in Boise, Idaho, found their family home, and have stayed ever since.
Well, I have six lined up that day to look at. And we came in here and we looked at it, and I liked the house. I wasn't so impressed that I wanted to buy it. She sat right down on the floor crying, so we bought it.
Jay has many special memories from the years he and Ann spent raising their kids.
With Michael, I thought he wasn't getting a fair share of attention because he really didn't demand it. So one day I took him to the Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City. We spent all day there, took pictures, and I bought him a little hat and some boots. And he still remembers that day. With David, they had a band concert in south of Dallas. And then in the afternoon, they had a track meet north of Dallas, at North Texas State. Yeah. And so I went to the band concert, and these guys put all their instruments in the bus, then got in the station wagon. I sped that 70 miles from where we're at to where the track meet was. And we got there in time, and we really cleaned up on the first and second place. I often think about this. I said, if I'd have just had as much time with my own kids as I have had with my grandkids, I'm sure my relationship would have been a lot stronger, especially with my daughters. I mean, I think my sons and I had a good relationship, but it wasn't so good with my daughters, I'm sure. When they were 17, they couldn't wait to get out of my lousy house, and then they all came back.
Nowadays, Jay enjoys being a grandfather to 26 grandkids and 4 great-grandkids.
They all love me to no end. And I know it's not fake. I know when they say they love me, that they really love me. Grandchildren as well as the great-grandchildren. I mean, risen any of them, which hasn't told me probably in the last month how much they love me.
Jay's career took many twists and turns, but a major highlight included the beginning of a revolutionary probiotics company.
We were a part of the Chevron, where we used the fertilizer. In the fertilizer division, it's a highly intensive capital business to start with, and you got to spend a lot of money before you get money back. And I guess somebody in San Francisco figured that out. And they just closed the whole fertilizer division, closed it all, sold all the factories, and we were gone. My whole career has been wanting to push something new. And so out here in Nampa, they were just starting in probiotics. I mean, nobody else, as far as I know, and I don't even mess with them. The first full year that I was there, we sold $700,000 worth of stuff. The year that Dallas, the guy who owned it, sold out, we sold $7 million worth of product, and he sold the business for $5 million. And when we first started this probiotics, I doubt if he could have run fast enough to give it to somebody. Now, everybody in Idaho, has got biotics.
Sadly, and all too soon, Jay and Ann lost their daughter, Sally. They took good care of her in her final days. Though it was a heavy trial, Jay remembers some tender mercies from that time.
You could tell she was just, getting worse the whole time. And then our niece was getting married in Salt Lake, and she heard us talking that one of us would stay home with her and the other would go to Salt Lake, and she heard that, and she says, "There's nobody going to Salt Lake unless I go with you." I mean, she only had a month to live on, so we packed a bunch of things in the back of the car and blankets and pillows, and she went down there and had an appointment with Jeffrey Holland, and he talked to her and told her her time on this earth was short, but everything was fine. He looked right into her eyes, but this time she was blind, and he got right down that close to her face, and when he stood up, that look in his eye was not of this world. And he left, and just a month after that, she died. But she said, even the last day that she was alive, she mentioned Brother Holland and said he had given her a ticket to see the Savior. Clawed up every time I think of that.
Through the ups and downs, Jay and Ann have spent over 70 years together, setting an example to all of pure love and devotion.
Oh, she's just dependable in everything. She's so educated. I mean, today she will learn something new. Today, I guarantee you. And it's been that way ever since I met her. And she even knows football now.
In these later years, Jay can look back over his life and see what things have been truly important to him. He wants to share those things with his posterity.
But I do want all of my wife and all of my kids and grandkids, great-grandkids, great-great-grandkids, and all of them, if I'm a beast sometimes, I really love them. And hope they keep telling me they love me. And I love my Savior as well. So, family, shape up. I just feel in like my own body that I've had a nice wife, a nice family, a nice career, a nice, you know. In fact, I've said just to her in the last few days, I don't mind dying, but I don't want to leave my heaven right here. You know, and I love this place.
As you've heard, Jay has worked hard his entire life, whether it be on the dry farm in his youth, raising his 7 kids, his career in agriculture, or serving in countless callings in the church. His positivity and kindness radiate, and it is clear that he is a follower of Christ. A huge thank you to the Swensons for being interviewed. If there is someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.